step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again. To begin, forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
We now join our program, already in progress.
Their own issues that make everything move. We have a high-strung elf, we have an herbal elf, we have a goth elf, and we have an elf with PTSD, and they just make the trees move and everything change. It's really quite wonderful.
And my
actors are amazing. They are truly amazing.
And these three actors, like you said, you worked with on a tour earlier this year.
Yeah.
And also, I know, speaking of you being in two places, we're coming up on, this time last year, you were doing Wolverine Walked Into a Bar.
That's right.
And now you're doing Clear to Partly Crazy.
Yes. Yes, at the
Jason
stake.
Doesn't do anything. He just, if he could be productive in society and life, you know, the world might be a better place.
We just keep, just keep flogging the mule. So here's what I have to say
to Austinites. If you happen to be driving up or down Congress, you're going to look to your left at one point and see Jason. You're going to look to your right and see Jason at Zach. Either way you take it, you can look within a mile radius. You will see him running fast or roller skating as fast as he can from point A to point B.
I'm just all over the place. Yeah, it's amazing. And this time, we were here this time last year, exactly, the day after the election.
I remember.
Let's ask you about that. It's a whole year after the election. You know what? Before we go anywhere, let me make a statement here. The views and opinions stated here on Offstage and On the Air are ours only and ours not only. Those of the board of directors or co-op or this station.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
So how are you a year later?
Well,
and I spent that morning together.
Yes, we did.
It was a rough morning.
Yes, we did. It was a very rough morning. And, in my director notes to Tuna Christmas, I said, this play was satire when we first wrote it. Now it reads like the Congressional Record. We never imagined that there were people to the right of some of the characters in Tuna, and they're in Congress.
Uh-huh.
In Congress and worse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, we didn't come into this business to be prophets, but it looked like we were.
It's interesting.
It is a very interesting time.
And I wonder, this is a part of a larger conversation of how that affects some of the humor within the pieces when it's when people come to see who might, as you've said so brilliantly, some people comes to see it thinking it's Chekhov.
Yes, they do. So some people have a very natural
connection
to the show. We have a character that's been in this show forever. He's Elmer Watkins, and he's with the local Klan, and he's advertising their special theme, which will be the whitest Christmas ever. And that used to get some real good laughs. Now it just looks like the news.
Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. And
it makes me feel lots of different strange things. That's not an easy.
It's it makes our job more important.
Yes.
The powers that be would love to come for the arts, and they try to, but yes. They're not gonna stop us.
Well, I feel like as a Texan, there's something right in the world when I can walk down the street and I see you in two different theaters. I feel like we're putting our values in the right place, and I mean that. I feel like the fact that we're nurturing your new work, and that we get to go down the street and see something more commercial done mm-hmm. at Zach Theater. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a good sign for me.
Well, it's like I said, it's important, and you know, I'm really at retirement age now, but I have no intention of doing that. But I'm not leaving Texas. Mm-hmm. I don't care how crazy it gets. Mm-hmm. I'm not leaving. I've spent my life here. I do my work here. I write about these people, mm-hmm. and that's what clear to partly crazy. That's just nuts, because I had a gig in Galveston last summer. I was going to do a gig with Gary P. Nunn, and it fell through, but they still had the date. So I said, well, can I just bring something in? They said, yeah. So I started looking through all my stuff, and I had three things that I thought could work together. They were all about Texas, and so I put this show together just to do the date, mm-hmm. and it's a hit.
And it's what freaky. Are the three topics?
the three topics, which are dear to all Texans, are cheerleading, tornadoes, and mental illness, which I all learned about at home.
I just love hearing about that all together. Well, I can't get the music to work. So I will. It's going to be that kind of show. We're going to make music on our own here today.
Y'all call in and talk dirty.
Y'all call in and talk dirty.
Not too dirty, because we don't need to get taken off air. We do have regulations.
That's right.
So since we're mixing it up today a little bit different anyway, why don't we do our interview interspersed, and we'll bump in with a few little news pieces.
There's one thing I could say.
Then we'll
go
back, and then I'll let you know what I was going to play, because some of them were pretty good.
If there's anything about the three people in this room that we share, it's a lack of
conversation going.
We have problems.
It's a lack of linear conversation.
Talking is not one of them.
Well, I mean, speaking of, you want to hit some of these hot topics?
Well, I want to first say thank you to Kim Simpson, because that show was another great international folk bazaar. You and I were actually asking him about the different music and really enjoying it this afternoon. So thank you, Kim Simpson. I think he already did leave. He was here a little bit for later. And we're missing Lisa Sheps today. We're sorry about that. We will not be having a backstage at Offstage today. Mm-hmm. So if you're tuning in later and you're thinking you're sticking around,
you're not.
You can stick around, but nothing is happening.
Yeah. Use that time for meditation.
Oh, but maybe we can edit the songs into the show. So maybe we will still get the kind of crazy music. Well, the opening music was supposed to be a number from I Can Get It For You Wholesale. Mm. And I actually chose What Are They Doing to Us? And I chose it ironically. It would have fit exactly what we were talking about earlier, is how I had it cut.
Well, we're going to still say you're clever.
Didn't want to play. So they keep having readings of the show. They just had another, earlier in June you and I were talking about?
Trip Coleman directing with Lindsay Mendez. And
she was part of it again. Raymond Camelou. Oh my God, I just said his first name wrong. Cinderella, what's his name?
Santino Fontana,
thank you. I'm like, I'm saying the wrong guy. And they just did another stage reading of it. And this one was an industry-only closed reading of it. So I don't know. I said to Nick, do you think they're not touching it? Because it's just so, I mean, it's Barbara and Elliot. I don't know,
but it is interesting. For our listeners who don't know, I Can Get It For You Wholesale is a musical produced by David Merrick. It has lyrics by Harold Rome and a book by Jerome Wideman. And it's based off of the 1937 novel. And it starred a 19-year-old Barbara Streisand, who was nominated for the Tony Award for Best Featured Actress in a Musical.
Elliot Gould, that's where she met Elliot Gould, yes. Her baby daddy. So, I mean, come on now.
But I think it's interesting timing. Of course, producers are wanting to bring this sort of golden age back because of the success that Scott Rudin's had with the wonderful, clean
revival
of Hello Dolly.
It's like a pajama game, even though it's dated. Mm-hmm. It's like you still go, like, even if you see the pajama game now, you want them to have a 7.5-cent raise. You're like, yeah.
I think it's real important to see these plays. You know, I teach some sometimes on a university level and lecture. And a lot of what I tell my students is you need to know what came before you.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to know what came before you. A couple of years ago, I was having dinner in L.A. with Holland Taylor and Sarah Paulson. And, and you know, we're having a wonderful time. And I brought up Kim Stanley, and Sarah Paulson went crazy.
Oh, you're about to make someone else crazy. Yeah, She's one of the reasons why I was an actress. She and you.
Yes, yes. And I realized there's so many of my students who didn't know who Kim Stanley was. And I pulled this stuff up
really?
And say, my God, this, you need to know this. Uh-huh. You need to, there's a thing that anybody out there listening, it was a thing called A Cardinal Act of Mercy. And it was on Ben Casey. And it was a 2-week
God,
thing.
God, I haven't heard that name in a long time.
And directed by Sidney Pollack. And you can pull it up on YouTube. And it's Kim Stanley at her absolute best. She got the Emmy for it. It's a woman going through heroin addiction. Some of the best stuff I have ever seen in my life. And I had all these students who had no idea who she was. So I brought her up, and Sarah Paulson went nuts. She pulled up her phone. When her phone rings, Kim Stanley pops up.
You
know
up.
What I was
she
just about to say?
In that piece.
You can see that contemporary resemblance between a Sarah Paulson
in
style acting.
Absolutely.
I have to tell y'all, I was so guilty of not listening. When you said Kim, I heard Kim Novak, and then you started to talk about the career, and I was like, Kim Novak didn't do that.
Yeah.
But now Kim Stanley. Yes. But it does make a lot of sense why an actress like Sarah Paulson could draw inspiration from her work.
You look at that.
Isn't it interesting that we have to do that sort of educating?
Absolutely. And the thing now that is so wonderful in educating students about theater is we have access to all this stuff on the internet that we didn't have when I was studying acting. We couldn't pull that up and say, well, watch Kim Stanley and Three Sisters. Okay, watch Kim Stanley and Sandy Dennis and Geraldine Page in Three Sisters. Now they can see it, and it makes everything so clear.
You can find anything if you're craving or longing or needing or... It's
absolutely.
It's awesome and it's devilish at the same time.
It is. But here's the. I don't know if you find this as well, Jason. Tangent a little bit, but I'm directing at UT. I'm directing The Drowsy Chaperone now.
Oh wow!
Which is such a wonderful, fun piece.
Yes,
it's you know such a love letter and spoof to the musicals of the 1920s. So when I bring, and it's just musicals in general. Mm-hmm. It sets itself in the 20s, but it is a love letter to the American musical. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. I wanted all these young students to know all of the players, all of the people. And they really do respond to that.
Oh, yeah.
To that information.
Oh, yeah.
Like plants that haven't been nourished in a long time, to watch certain performances and see the way people, or hear actresses. For instance, the woman who plays the Drowsy Chaperone, the character of the Drowsy Chaperone is a combination of everything from Pola Negri to Eartha Kitt to Barbara Streisand to Liza Minnelli.
Oh my gosh, it is like a crazy...
To
Marion
Seldes. You know, it's just that grand damn... So you know I had a fun time putting together a playlist of videos for her.
You did.
But they take it in. I don't know if you experienced that, but they really do respond to that.
Oh, yeah.
Their history.
You know, students are amazing. I tell my students at Texas Tech, when on the occasions I teach there, I say, you know, people your age think you invented sex, and you admit that other people did it, but you think you got it right. You know, you got it right. And then I put up all of these old people. I said, that old gal gets some. Now, I'm telling you, look at her. She gets some. She knows things
you
don't know.
The circle of life.
And that's theater.
It is important.
That's theater.
It is important for them to know, and I love that. I know we got a little digress from...
Yeah, but it's kind of going on, so there's... Now announced they did a short concert version of another old musical, and they now announced they are going to bring it to Broadway, but there's no house yet. Kiss Me, Kate.
Oh, wow.
Starring one Kelly O'Hara.
Mm-hmm.
So I know. I was like, so there's another... But it's definitely going to happen. I think it's part of Paper Mill season, maybe?
No, it's part of Roundabout
season. That's right. But they just don't have a house yet or know where the house is.
Wasn't Ann Miller in the original?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, there's nothing like when you get together with a bunch of drunk stage managers and talk about Ann Miller. There is nothing more. I was talking to a woman at the Kennedy Center one time, and she said, we're talking about Ann Miller. She said they were doing Sugar Babies, and they did this big finish, she and Mickey Rooney, and the lights didn't go. So they did it again, and the lights didn't go, and they did it three times, and the lights didn't go. And so they just walked off, and Ann went over and grabbed the stage manager. She said, "You left me out there with cheese on my face." And she said, "Ann, that's egg." She said, "Egg, cheese, milk, it's all poultry."
I've never heard that one.
Oh my goodness.
And as we know, it is all poultry.
It is all poultry. Is okay, so the fact that the lights didn't go off and Mickey Rooney and they were all standing there doing it. There's so much about that story on so many levels.
She's got cheese on her face.
That is so funny.
So we got Kelly O'Hara and Kiss Me Kate coming up. But also, I don't think we talked about this last week. Speaking of knowing your history and coming back, right? The Boys in the Band.
Yes.
A production of The Boys in the Band starring Jim Parsons, Zachary Quinto, Andrew Reynolds, directed by Joe Mantello, produced by Ryan Murphy and David Stone. Ryan Murphy of the American Horror Story.
I was just about to say, this is a Ryan Murphy, and is this one of his first theatrical producing, or he's done one other small thing, right?
Well, they were all part of the Normal Heart as
That's
well.
That's what it was. Ooh.
So
okay.
Speaking
That's
of knowing your history, is like I think there's such an influx directly to the generation that you and I are talking about, is to educate. Whether it's, so right now we've got Torch Song Trilogy,
yes.
Boys in the Band,
yes.
We had Normal Heart. There is a movement, and even with the material of Hello Dolly, Kiss Me Kate, all these different shows, I think there is, with the rise of technology and falsettos, a rise of technology is also a push from us to make sure that the next generation knows.
So where's the rink, Nick?
The rink needs to be
I want to go around the rink.
Well, and the thing is that these plays really are classics.
Yes.
They are classics. And I hate to admit that I'm old enough to have seen a classic when it was done the first time. But they are. They
but
are
also, Jason, full circle around to what you said, a lot of these stories that people say are museum pieces are of a different time or represent a now in a completely different prism, in the same way Tuna was a satire and now is being seen through a very different prism. It's the same thing as a production of The Normal Heart or The Boys in the Band or Torch Song Trilogy resonating in a completely different way as a society reapproaches lessons it's already learned.
It's so important to know where we came. From where we came. And I remember when Joe and I were in New York with Greater Tuna and Torch Song was on that year.
Mm-hmm.
And Estelle Getty playing the mother. Mm-hmm. With Harvey, mm-hmm. It was unbelievable, and it played on Monday nights, and we were off, so we saw it a bunch of times.
I was you went multiple times.
Joe Sears and I sat. We had house seats, best seats in the house, and we got so hysterical we stuffed our scarves in our mouths. We were gnawing on our scarves because we were screaming so loud. We were afraid we'd mess him up. It was genius work.
It is.
It was absolutely and brave.
Mm-hmm.
What a brave guy.
And isn't it interesting that it's brave in a different way now?
Yeah.
And the same way that everything is seen through a different prism.
Yeah, you could still use the same word, but it means something totally different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But the importance that we're putting on educating, please know this story. Please hear this music.
Mm-hmm.
Please know this. It's part of your lineage. Mm-hmm. It's part of where you come from. The only way to continue it is to honor it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the young generation has such great examples in artists like Lin-Manuel Miranda, who does take his current pieces and gives and is always honoring who from where he got it.
Well, I'm
going
to
talk
about something with, I'll go out of order because we're not doing, we don't live by rules here, gestation and FAA regulations and rules. But otherwise, speaking of Lin and education, they took his original green silk suit and it was given to the Smithsonian. And it's now in the Smithsonian of American History. It was donated on November 6th. So in addition to it, the Smithsonian received a mid-19th century oil painting of Eliza Shuler. And it was done by Daniel P. Huntington. The costume they were given on the 6th. The costume will go on display in 2018 in March. And it'll be part of the Giving in America exhibit. So it's going to tell the story of philanthropy and the arts.
Hmm.
I was like, "What? I don't remember a section on philanthropy and the arts at the Smithsonian." No. I've been addicted to the Smithsonian since I was a kid, and I found out they had the Fonz's jacket and Archie Bunker's chair. Oh, yeah. And I was like, "Mom, road trip, please." Yeah. And then I found out like the Orville brothers, the Wright brothers, the Wright brothers' plane was there. Yeah, I fell in love with the Smithsonian. So then the portrait's going to go in the philanthropy collection. The portrait was donated by the Graham Wyndham, which is the orphanage that Eliza Shuler actually founded way back in the Hamilton days when Eliza was for real and is still functioning, open, and working as of today. What was interesting is that Philippa Sue, who played the role of Eliza Shuler, didn't realize this and discovered this along her journey and rehearsals that this place still existed, that it was still open. And she, along with another cast member, Morgan Marcel, shot a whole documentary on this. So it's called Sharing Our Stories, The Eliza Project. So it's an orphanage that was founded 211 years. And that's where this painting came from, too. So they also, during, like, as they handed over the painting, as they were like, here is the costume, they also did a first airing of this documentary and this whole journey that they went learning about Eliza and about this organization being run. And they started their own organization to kind of keep into the same vein and same idea. And they're... they said, ultimately, they're giving birth to a foundation that will bring performing arts to the Graham Wyndham children so they can incorporate within the same organization.
That's wonderful.
Hey, that's
and
fantastic.
I was like, woo, that's all kind of weaved in. So I guess this documentary is going to be on a few other places. They didn't say where else it would air, but it's called Sharing Our Stories, The Eliza Project. And it follows the whole cast and everybody's journeys as they were discovering who these people really were. And I guess, you know, the unique history and story when you're in New York and the history's there too.
Yes.
You're lucky enough to be able to go on hand and experience this in that rehearsal process and working process. So how cool that you always think you heard everything from Hamilton, but wait, there's more. It's like Ron Popeil.
No,
but wait, there's more. So I thought that was pretty darn cool. I'm kind of bummed that I don't have this to play. There's a new musical opening on Broadway, currently in previews. It's opening tomorrow night, so we'll get to talk about it next week and hopefully play some of the clips. It's called The Band's Visit. It's based on a movie. It's about an Egyptian police band that ends up stuck in the Israeli desert. Tony Shalhoub's in it.
Yeah, it says the press notices talk about after a mix-up at the border, an Egyptian police band is sent to a remote village in the middle of Israel, the Israeli desert. With no bus until morning and no hotel in sight, these unlikely travelers are taken in by locals. And then it proceeds to follow their stories into these families' homes and talks a little, gives little insights into these families' homes. It's reminiscent of another sleeper from last year's Broadway season, Come From Away.
Yes. It reminds me of how the stories intertwine. I'm so bummed I can't play it because the music in it, it sounds like half of something Kim would be playing from International Folk Bazaar. And then it's something like a very classic ballad from something like very Rodgers and Hammerstein, but then it's very, very current. I mean, this just all the music and visually when you watch these little bands and the spirit that these characters have when this one woman singing about her parents, it's called Omar Sharif, and she's singing a song about her mother and what it meant for them to see Omar Sharif on TV and looking at the world through the television in the middle of the desert. And just the movements, and you can see the way they sing and talk and perform. I don't know what this cast just seems, I don't know, it seems really cool. And it just keeps, it draws me in my senses. It heightens me in so many different ways that I'm like,
Well, again, an issue that needs to be part of the art dialogue mm-hmm. right now, if anything does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the issues between these two faiths. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of have you ever seen the film Madame Rosa?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And she takes in abandoned kids, and so she's got one Jewish kid and one Muslim kid, and the Muslim kid's father shows up after 15 years and wants him back, mm-hmm. and he's crazy, and so she does an end around and says, "Oh gosh, I got it mixed up. I brought the Jewish kid up as the Muslim, as the Jew," yep. and he throws a fit, and she says, hey, you haven't been here in 15 years. You don't see your kid in 15 years. You're surprised he'd become a Jew. It's a wonderful moment.
I love that.
Oh, yeah, and he had a heart attack and died.
So. I was like, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film.
Well, I'm excited. Did Michael see this when he was
did.
Just recently in
yeah,
New
York? Yeah, he just got back a couple days ago, and he saw this, and he reported back that he was blown away. He was just blown away.
It seems like it's just going
to
be like...
The biggest thing that his takeaway was how refreshing it was to see... he said, it's not a cast anyone has ever seen on Broadway mm-hmm. before in terms of the look, the culture, the feeling.
It's different, but it's, everything.
But it's the look of the actors themselves. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is, you know, they've really cast a beautiful company of Egyptian and Middle Eastern looking actors. And also, he said, not only the curtain comes up and there's the entire cast is on the stage, and you go, I've never seen that before. On a Broadway stage, that combination of people mm-hmm. And the uniqueness of their culture. But then the show itself continues to unfold and is told, he said, you know, in a way that I don't think people are accustomed to, which is no big showy numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very subtle. It's almost like a delicate, delicate little view into people's windows with mm. songs. And I think it's you're very apt in saying like music you would hear on International Folk Bazaar, but a very much like delicate music into people's lives that you won't see a kick line, you won't see, but it's almost like a play with beautiful, beautiful music.
You could see it when she's singing these songs, like at the movement and the two numbers that I saw that I was like, this is so different. Like, yeah. I don't know. I think that's kind of cool. And then in a totally different crazy way, because my brother is so excited because we missed a chance at getting to London to go see it. Bat Outta Hell, the Meatloaf musical, is I in New York, baby.
Wow.
It started in Manchester and then moved to London. Got rave reviews. My father loved him some Meatloaf. We still have his Meatloaf CD in the car. So they're trying to actually get in before the Tony cutoff date in April. So I don't know what theater, I don't know what's going on, but the word is it's supposed to be here. I think it's playing in Toronto. Yes, it is in Toronto. It's going gangbusters in Toronto. It's a box office wonder and the audience loves it. Nobody's fired and nobody's hurt. Now he's laughing at that because it's one of the co-producers from Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark.
That's so funny.
And I'm like, I love that you make a reference to that on your own when no one asked. You're kind of funny. So he said, everybody keeps saying that Bat Outta Hell is an over-the-top hoop. So I don't know. Yep. I think it's, you know what? I totally would go see it. I don't know.
You're in this one alone, Nicole. I'm gonna let you tell me all about it.
Listen, I'm not excited about it like I was Rocky Das musical, and full wholeheartedly will still admit that that's everything. But I'm a little excited about it. I don't know. We're gonna take a moment here in a break. It's not gonna be music, but we're gonna hear from some other important people, and we'll be back in just a moment. We are back. We are back.
You know what I like today? It's flipped on its head. Take the show and flip it on its head.
Listen, every once in a while I've done a round table or flipped the script a little bit. So I'm enjoying it. I mean, I like it with you two. It's like kind of, it's a good time. It's a good time.
One little upside in the arts today. I don't know if y'all know, if you know Kara McGregor.
That name is familiar.
Yes, I do know Kara McGregor.
Well, she's now. Will you step up? She has just been elected to the city council in Lockhart, Texas.
Woo! Kara. No joke.
She got elected last night. We were just, I was up all night. So I was so happy.
That's so exciting.
And Lockhart's becoming one of those towns. A lot of people are moving out there from Austin because it's more affordable. It's quieter. She's been out there for years, hasn't she? We get concerts from her twice a year. It's incredible.
Nick, did you see the stage reading of Sunday in the Park with that Austin Shakespeare did?
I didn't.
Yes. I feel like you've had to have seen her in town.
The name is super familiar.
Just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful voice. Like songbird.
Oh, well, that's fantastic news. Yes.
And a lovely person.
Yeah. Yeah, she's now on the council, and that is incredible news for Lockhart.
Well, hats off to Kara. Hats off.
Yeah. I just want to say something really quick about elections. I have to say this because I think it's our
response. You tell people to go vote? No. Like Trump Jr., he told everyone to go vote today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Doesn't bother me if he's telling them to vote on the wrong day.
Wrong day.
But I think it's our responsibility to say out loud the names of people. These people, we have to say the name. Danica Roem, who is the first transgender elected official.
Pretty awesome.
We have to say that name.
Thank you.
Danica Roem, Virginia's most socially conservative state lawmaker, was ousted from office yesterday by Danica Roem, a Democrat who will be the nation's first openly transgender elected official. That's huge.
It's called jazz hands.
That's it.
Huge.
Wave your little hand and whisper so long.
Long dearie.
Yes, we are coming to town.
Yes.
It's amazing.
It's important. I mean, it brings me such joy. And I'm proud. I'm proud of our citizens of our country for getting out and voting and doing what they did last night to make this happen.
Did you hear the acceptance speech?
Oh my gosh.
Yes. It was, for every kid that's hid in the corner, for everyone that's been bullied, for everyone that's been disregarded, for everyone that's been told that your heart doesn't matter, your needs don't matter. That you do not fit. This is for all of you.
Yes.
It's pretty
really
amazing.
Beautiful. It's pretty amazing.
It is a bright light in a time of grave cynicism and darkness. Yeah. And so it's important to say her name, and I want to say it again. Danica Roem, thank you. We're so excited.
We are so... It is really awesome sauce. I'm glad you and I spoke about bringing that up on air and had forgotten. So I'm glad you brought up Kara and Danica and got that in. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you to both. We are back here at Offstage and On the Air. You're listening to KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We also stream live on KOOP.org. We are CD musicless, but we're not musicless when we're here because you've got Nick Squared. And we're here today making our own music.
Speaking of music in our lives, of music that Lisa Sheps and I always sing, is a little bit of...
I was going to play it.
I know.
You know why? Because on Sunday night, it was officially they moved Lion King into a new theater. Sir Elton and a lot of the original cast showed up, Julie was there, and Julie's got M. Butterfly running, so she's got two little...
She's the Jason Williams of New York.
...of New York right now, that's right. She's so Jason Williams
all over the place.
And they
told her to slow down.
So Elton came to celebrate 20 years of The Lion King and jumped on stage and sang The Circle of Life.
One of those little antelopes has been in that show for 20 years.
Well,
the whole time. That's an old antelope.
I don't think antelopes live 20 years. No. That's an old antelope. Loping.
It's still loping.
Boya, who
was in the tour this summer, she's been in it for like 15, 16 years. There's something when you talk to the cast members in that show, there's something magical about that show.
It's called a 401k.
And the family. Well, the Facebook.
It makes sense.
I don't know. I mean, saw it again this summer, I looked at Amy as we're sitting in the theater and the giraffe puppets were coming down over the audience and they're right in front of us. And I looked at Amy and I said, this is just as magical as it was 20 years ago.
Yes.
Like, it's it, there's something that's healing and heartwarming. Mm-hmm. I just, yeah.
20
the
years.
Circle of life, baby.
It's pretty impressive. 20 years.
That was pretty cool. I want to talk to Jason, but I have to bring this up because I thought Jason would give me some insight on this news piece. So we all know who Beyonce is, right?
Bless her heart. Mm-hmm.
Fellow Texan Beyonce. So her mom, some people know her mom, Tina Knowles Lawson. She designs and was a mom. I guess she was really the first momager before Kardashian mama, if you really want to get at it. But she and Richard Lawson, her husband, you know, they've always been about empowering and mentoring people. They opened up a theater center in L.A.
Really?
And they called it Waco.
Really?
That's confusing.
Thank you. But it stands for where art can occur.
Or but as we call Waco, we ain't coming out.
I was like, I know the Waco way from driving down 35. You just wave and keep going.
We always called it Lubbock on the Brazos. That's it.
I mean, listen, Chip and Joanna Waco, digress Texas. Up. Waco's a cool place. No. What?
No, it's
Does
not.
This make any sense to you that they name their theater? I mean, it's in LA, but I was all like, Waco, they opened a theater center in Waco. And then I had to keep reading and I was like, what? What?
You know what? The city council of Waco, Texas is like, finally, people are going to visit our website.
Well, they do. Chip and Joanna Gaines have changed Waco. Waco went from having, they have up to 3,000 to 5,000 visitors a day. And on the weekend, it's crazy. So Waco's been put back on the map from those two.
It's a lot of Dr. Pepper.
It's a lot of Dr. Pepper.
It will be interesting to see if that continues now that they've decided to not do their show anymore. But I don't know. But Waco, yeah, they've done some. I was like, ooh, that's like some good PR for the city over the last few years. But yes, it's called the Waco. I mean, I think it's great. It's supposed to be a place where we can celebrate an individual's artistic creation and self-expression through theater, reflecting fine art, innovation, craftsmanship, and inspire imagination. So it opened on the 3rd. Power tour. I found it interesting. It wasn't Texas, but I found it interesting. Yes. It was in LA, but it has the name Waco. I don't know. There's a whole, and it's all in caps. W-A-C-O.
It's exciting.
I don't know. And then the other really cool thing happening, because I really want to talk to Jason a lot more. Broadway League just announced there is a new initiative they're rolling out using better technology to serve audiences who are deaf, have hearing, or vision loss. Mm-hmm. So there's this brand new technology and with new assisted listening devices. There's progress that has been made in vocal recognition technology. There's new closed captioning technology, new audio description technology, and it will now allow a more accurate and synchronized assistance with the mobile devices and headsets. Hmm. So the majority of the houses on Broadway will all be offering this option by January 1st.
That's wonderful.
And then all the technology will be in every single Broadway theater by summer of 2018. And some of the venues are already equipped to provide these new services. So they have staff at each performance to demonstrate the new technology for everyone too. So they said it on the advent of on-demand closed captioning on Broadway is a true game changer. So they anticipate the members who have given up live events because they couldn't understand dialogue and lyrics. We hope they'll happily return to Broadway.
That's wonderful.
Mm. Not awesome.
That's
the old technology is wonderful too. We will have a signed
performance tonight, right?
I don't know if it's tonight or not. It may be tonight.
I think it is tonight.
I'll tell you, that's a fun thing to watch. Mm-hmm. Watching the signers at Tuna Christmas. That's funny.
I didn't even think about how funny that would be.
Says, I'm up to my knockers and frozen patties. watch that in sign language. That is well worth it.
Well,
worth the price of a tiki.
So let's talk more about this. For if you've been just tuning in, Nick and I are so lucky that we have Jason Williams with us this afternoon. He's all ours. He's here talking the many different. Yes. Things you are working on, because boy, you're working on everything.
I
but
got a load of
you
stuff
are
going.
Working as a not just you're not just the co-creator of the Tuna franchise and series that is so beloved here, but you are a directing a Tuna Christmas at Zach Theater, and then you are going to be starring in a one-man show, Clear to Partly Crazy, stateside at the Paramount.
Yes.
And that's all going on now.
It's, you know, I'm up to my neck in Texas. the thing about Clear to Partly Crazy, as I said earlier, I put it together with three pieces that were written separately, never intended to be together. And I just did it to cover a booking that we had, and something had fallen through, and it was a hit. And I realized later that this is the first show I've done other than Tuna that is strictly about Texas and Texans and that whole...
Even more than Life After Lubbock?
Well, no. Well, Life After Lubbock was...
But I guess it's really kind of...
It was very... Life After Lubbock was about specifically... it was Texans. It was Lubbockites. But this one is really about... Life After Lubbock was about the crazies in Lubbock, which is always a great thing. That'd be a good musical.
We're not localizing the crazies this round.
This is more the crazies in my family,
We all have them.
My mother...
I think we were talking about him on the drive over. Nick.
we had a cousin in my family, an elderly cousin who just jumped the mental rails in even numbered years in spring, just like a like a fine Bahamian Swiss watch, wristwatch. She'd jump them, and we'd have to get her committed. And the worst mistake I ever made in my life, because my cousin loved me so much, she wanted me to come visit her in the mental hospital because she wanted to kill everybody else in the family. Mm-hmm. So, but one day I took my mother to the mental hospital to visit my cousin, and my mother, just being herself, set back mental recovery in that joint by a good 15 years.
And was this Menninger's?
Oh, this was South Presa in San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, nice public place.
Nice.
Yes. And oh my Lord! And my cousin wanted cigarettes, which everybody in a mental hospital does. Mm-hmm. And so we brought three cartons. We had them in a bag, and my cousin came up, just crazy as a loon, and she said, "Do you have the cigarettes?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Shh." Be quiet, be quiet. They'll be on us like flies. I said, okay. And my mother, who is deaf as a post, she said, what'd she say? I said, she said, be quiet about the cigarettes. And my mother said, oh, here they are. Pulls out a carton and waves it. And so then, and they were just, they glommed us. They just glommed us. So Vivian took a couple of packs and starts handing out cigarettes to the populace. She's the Pied Piper of tar and nicotine. And then, so everybody's got two or three cigarettes. The staff's going nuts. A lot of these people aren't supposed to smoke. And my mother comes back and it's just mad as hell. I said, what's wrong with you? She said, they don't have any matches. I said, no, they don't. She said, well, why not? I said, I think management would think that was a little dangerous. She said, well, they're certainly going to go nuts if they have cigarettes and they don't have any matches. And I said, well, they didn't all have cigarettes until you handed them out like a junkie in South Houston. And then this woman behind thick glass just does this and mother turns around and stares at her like she bought a ticket. And I said, stop staring at her. She said, she's making that noise. I said, that's why she's in here. You know? And then I looked at a nurse and I said, we're either going to have to go or we're going to have to get a room. I can't take any more. That was Mama in the mental hospital. Oh, my God. So. But it just doesn't stop. But the play also, is also about cheerleading, as it used to be. Mm. And before it was a sport and people got killed doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get killed.
Oh, yeah. Throw them up in the air, basket toss.
No, but they've got, like, murder for hires with the cheerleaders.
Oh, yeah.
The cheerleader
always,
mom.
They always had that.
They
always had that. Yeah.
Knock the daughter out so
old school stuff in Odessa. Yeah.
So it is, the three are cheerleaders, tornadoes, and mental illness.
And by the way, my opening music, I was very excited because I was going to play Tornado from The Wiz.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just, I heard the whoosh and then the, I was like, so Curtis Mayfield, like Herbie Hancock, and I was like, The Whiz makes tornadoes kind of exciting. I forgot about that. And I was very excited to play it. But
where does the tornadoes come in terms of your history?
Well,
obviously being a Texan.
You didn't have a storm cellar, did you?
No, we didn't. And, you know, which is crazy, but we didn't. But it was a very social thing up there. We were near Lubbock, and it was when I was about 6 to 10, they had a lot of tornadoes up there. And so my mother accepted invitations from everybody at the Wesleyan Service Guild and the Study Club and the Garden Club, so we could never go to the same cellar twice.
She's the Amanda Wingfield of storm cellars.
We couldn't, and it didn't matter where the wind was, which way the wind was coming from. It mattered not. Wow. And my parents, one time, are out fighting on the front porch. I'm in the car. It's hailing, raining, the car is rocking, and they're fighting about where to go. Mm-hmm. And finally, I did something that I've done did years later on a plane and made everybody a little frantic, and I just screamed, "We're all gonna die." And that I have found in my time that really just tossing that in does get people focused.
It really brings everyone together.
Rounds up the hostages, you know. But yeah, but we're lucky we didn't get killed on the way to the cellar.
But here's my question. Yeah. And I come from a place, I'm Texas Hill Country raised. And mm-hmm. the tornadoes didn't really mm-hmm. get down to the Hill Country. Mm-hmm. We had floods.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say Dallas is probably where it starts, because when I moved from Houston to Dallas, it was middle school, and all of a sudden we had these tornadoes. I'm like, where are you people under desks at? What? We didn't have that in Houston.
Yeah. No, we didn't have it either. So is there, I love that you were going from storm cellar to storm cellar. Does Emily Post write anything about etiquette?
That's interesting.
Oh, we have a woman that I talk about in the show. We called her Mrs. Sneed. It wasn't mm-hmm. her real name. And she was just, you know, small towns breed some really horrible folk. But Mrs. Sneed really was at the top of the flagpole.
Mm-hmm.
And she, "Well, hello. We're so glad you could make it. You just have a seat right there. Let me get you a Coca-Cola." And I don't know where she found these Cokes. They were so small, it would hack off a pygmy. I mean, this thing, now don't drink it all at once. You know, it's like saying, here's two M&Ms, save the yellow one for Thursday. You know, and she was, "And we're so glad to have you here, but don't tell anybody else. This is mostly for people from our church."
Oh,
yeah.
There
was that kind of stuff. And then, but also the play, at one point we go into, it's the day we nearly all died, but we ended up in an old-fashioned root cellar that friends of our family had that had been there for 50 years, mm-hmm. and it became time travel
mm-hmm.
when we went under there, because the town was about to blow away when we went under, and you looked on the walls and you saw the preserves and the pickled vegetables.
What you think of is like the movie storm cellar.
Yeah.
It was a true cellar.
And it was true cellar, and it was all in kerosene lamplight mm-hmm. and all of that. And my father, I really felt really strongly toward my father about that time, because I could tell he was very comfortable there. He had grown up with that. Mm-hmm. He had hidden out in these cellars when he was a kid. And I also thought too, and talk about it, how people up there, it's very natural when you know, we from that part of Texas are children of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
We are like the Comanches. We are mm-hmm. like the mm-hmm. herders in the Gobi Desert. Mm-hmm. We are used to the flat and the dry. And when it rains, and when rain and ice and fire fall from above, the natural thing for us was to go into the earth.
Interesting.
And it was very much, it felt almost like you could almost relate to Jonah in the whale.
Hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and then when you would come out, it was always so amazing once the storms passed, because everything was shining and glimmering and beautiful and still, And, you know, and you realize the grass is going to be greener by tomorrow because of all of this. And then I was always secretly hoping it would happen again real soon because
so you
it was
go
exciting.
Back.
So can you, I mean, this it's well, impossible not to ask the question about the catharsis that putting this specific piece together has been over the past year for you. Because you and I were in the rehearsal studio this time last year.
Yes, we were.
And talk about the catharsis of telling, I mean, Storm Cellar's community. You go down, you go to the depths, the archetype, you have to regress for progression's sake. You go under to come up. Cheerleading, community, and community. Mental illness, there's a great community within your own, whether it's the community of your mind or the community of others with mental illness. Can you talk, what's the catharsis? Has there been a catharsis in the writing of this?
There truly was, because it is very much about... that we find our icons of comfort in amazing places. We find it. We found that icon of comfort in a root cellar. Mm-hmm. We found it. You know that we actually watching my cousin's madness was something that I was so afraid of, and I realized later that she kind of made that choice. Mm-hmm. And that I had to admire it, that I admired her madness, that I admired that she had chosen not to play totally by the rules, that she chose not to take all the medications and live this dull life. She would rather
fight it.
She would rather fight it the other way. And it was much more exciting, and it was not without its humor. Mm-hmm. And she understood the humor. And then with the cheerleading, of course, cheerleading in West Texas is, you know, it's the closest thing to royalty. You know, it really is. I always talked about my mother. My mother was always down on royalty. Mm-hmm. And she always said, she'd talk when Diana married Charles. Uh-huh. She said, I hope she gets pregnant real fast. She said, that family needs fresh blood. I said, well, mother, she said, they do. They do. She said, the only difference, she said, they inbreed. Said, the only difference between Buckingham Palace and Pig Track, Arkansas, is the quality of the footwear. She said, now that's the difference. And she said, and if they keep intermarrying, they're going to start having kids that look like bird dogs. She said, Charles already does. And I said, mother, that's kind of cold. She said, I'll picture him with a dead duck in his mouth and get back to me. So Vivian never cut you any slack, on any of that. Oh. But the thing about the cheerleaders was that they were, what I talk about in that piece was that it didn't matter if you had talent or could leap. That wasn't what it was about. Mm-hmm. It was choosing people we liked. Mm-hmm. It was who we wanted. And there was and for these people, this may have been the highlight of their life. And there was something beautiful about that.
Truly.
There was something beautiful about
that. So I'm just going to take one quick second. We need to hear a few more things and then come back really quick because we only have like a few more minutes left and we still have more questions to ask.
This has been fun.
Yes, it has. We only have like just a few more minutes. We've had Jason Williams here with us today, and it has been everything talking a little bit about Clear to Partly Crazy and Tuna Christmas. We only have a minute or two. I know we talked earlier about Tuna Christmas, but Nick and I had a question for you about this. So I'm gonna let you fire it real quick.
Well, just really quickly, as we touched on a little bit, it's the next generation's time to discover tuna.
Yes.
And I feel strongly about that. I was raised on tuna. Mm-hmm. It is part of my artistic and personal DNA, as it is many. Mm-hmm. But it's the next generation's time for tuna. Talk about this, how it's been to have three actors and the difference between a thrust and a proscenium and how that's affected.
Well, the thrust, as it says, thrusts out. So you have audiences on three sides. Mm-hmm. So you have to put the set way back. Mm-hmm. And we have
Is that why you have three actors?
That No.
So you have elves.
I'm just kidding.
And I've actually written one of my actors is so good in Greater Tuna and another role. I just brought that role back in. I brought the mortician back in.
Oh, lovely.
No, he was too good. He was too good. So much of what we did with Tuna Christmas, it was always proscenium, and you were just facing right out at the audience. Mm-hmm. Now you're coming at them from every angle. We have 14 ways to get on that stage.
Which is amazing.
14 ways to get on that stage. We have them coming everywhere but a hole in the floor, and we couldn't find one.
That's fantastic.
So, you know, in that sense, it's been real exciting to revisualize it. And then the other thing, too, is I've got three actors who are all quite brilliant. Hmm. Will Mercer, who plays a lot of Joe's roles, starts on a very calm level, and it is all from the gut. It is all from people that he recognizes. The one who plays the children is very cerebral. Mm. He starts there and works down to heart. And the other one is a natural comic, and he starts way up, and you have to bring him down. They work in totally different ways, and they're totally complementary, and they love each other. They love working together.
Well, I say to anyone who hasn't discovered Tuna, and it's not part of your family's vocabulary, your artistic vocabulary, you have an opportunity to see it at Zach Theater. For more information on a Tuna Christmas running through December 31st, when do you open at Zach?
It's
open currently.
You can go now.
In previews.
Yeah. Yes.
At the Zach Theater at the Clayburgh Stage through December 31st. You can get more information at zachtheater.org. If you're interested in seeing Jason's new piece, Clear to Partly Crazy, at the Stateside at Paramount, which is November 24th through the 26th, you can visit austintheater.org for tickets. Either way, November 24th through December 31st, there's a lot of great celebration and Jason Williams and wonderful art here in Austin, and we should be very proud and support this piece. I'm excited for you, Jason.
Well, thank you for your support. I appreciate being here.
Thank you. Without any music, we ran all the way up, over, and we're out. We'll be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Thank you very much. Austin Monitor News is next.
Have a great week.
There you go.